Brought to you by Black Knight. It's the technology.ie podcast, episode 18 for Thursday, February 23rd, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinichon. Dias Maria Vagas Faltrovistach, hello and welcome to the technology.ie podcast. This is Conor Muinichon with you in the Edgecast Media podcast studios, reaching out across the internet with the power of Skype to find my co-host and Black Knight CEO Michaela Nealon. Are you there, Michaela?
I am, Con. How's it going?
I'm very well. Where are you?
Not anywhere that exciting this evening, I'm afraid. I'm up at near Dublin Airport as I'm flying out early tomorrow morning.
All right, we'll talk to you more about that in a little while and what you're going for. And we also want to welcome our guest on the programme this evening, CEO of the Irish Internet Association, Joan Mulvihill. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Con. How are you?
Good. You're at home this evening.
I'm at home on my couch.
On the show this evening, we're going to talk about Mac OS 10 Mountain Lion has been announced and released to developers. We'll talk about that. Also about the recent visit of the Chinese vice president. And we'll mention a few other things as well. And of course, we'll have a detailed chat with Joan about her work with the Irish Internet Association. And also talk about the Black Knight Xbox giveaway. We'll talk to Michaela about that again in a little while. But first, Mac OS 10. What version are you running, Michaela?
Whatever the most recent one is.
Are you right up to date?
I am. Let me just double check. What is this? Hold on. It is
Lion, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, 10.7.3.
Right.
Whatever that is. It's the most recent one.
I have a kind of a, do you know what I have? I have a sort of a Windows-based phobia because I'm generally a Windows and a PC user. And so I have a fear of software upgrades that Microsoft has built into us over the years. And as a result, I tend to avoid new versions of software from Microsoft because of that. My general experience has been that your hardware isn't usually able for the latest version of Windows. And I've applied that to Mac as well. Am I being overcautious, Michaela? I have a four-year-old iMac on my desk here, and I'm still running Leopard, I think it is. I'm about three versions behind on the OS.
Being blunt, you're being a little bit silly.
Am I?
Well, see, the thing about Apple is they control the entire experience. I mean, they control all the hardware. So if they say that it'll run on your hardware, it'll run on your hardware. You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, they said that, though, about the iPhone 3G, and they rolled out iOS 4 on it. And some of us with slightly older iPhones were crippled for several months by that. The software wasn't quite up to the hardware wasn't really able for the software. But that was kind of atypical, you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, because Apple controls the entire experience, I mean, they control from the widget all the way through. If they say that the hardware you have will support whatever version of the OS they're releasing, you should be fine.
What about you, Joan? Are you Mac or Windows or both?
I'm a Windows girl. I worked for an accountancy firm for 4 years before I came into this industry. They're not quite in the Mac space, so I've always been a Windows PC person, and it was my default position then when I moved to the IIA.
But you know, that's interesting because I phoned you a while ago and we were talking on Skype at the time and I heard your phone ring. So I know you're using an iPhone, Joan.
I am using an iPhone, this is true.
Mm. And this is interesting because it's been my experience that iPhone and iOS and iPod have recruited, if you like, a whole new generation of Mac customers. Let's not forget iPad as well. And down on top of that, we're now seeing some of that iOS experience, Michaela, being brought into the Mac now with the release of this latest version of Mac OS X.
Well, they'd already started it in the current release. I mean, a lot of the stuff that you're kind of seeing on the screen, you're kind of going, I'd say if you're an iPhone user, you're kind of going, you know, that looks very, very familiar. But what they're talking about now, it looks like they're bringing it even closer.
Yeah.
So I suspect they're kind of almost converging. So you're going to have very, very similar concepts both on desktops, laptops, tablets, and smartphones.
How far can you carry that analogy, or can you carry that, how would you say, palm top or mobile device experience? I mean, we're used to a lot of us, you know, switching around between different tabs, you know, having several applications open at once, for example. The iPhone really and the iPad don't really lend themselves to that.
No, they don't. I mean, it's one of the weaknesses of the iOS on iPhone. Mm. I mean, I don't know whether this OS X Mountain Lion is going to be more just kind of an interface thing, or is there something underneath and the underlying actual software. But it's definitely going to have more of a look and feel of kind of iPhone, iPad type of thing about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you get used to it. I mean, there's a lot of stuff now. I mean, I'm looking at my MacBook Pro here. It's a early 2011 model. There's no buttons on the trackpad. It's just one flat space. You know, whereas if you look at older versions, it was still kind of had the buttony type effect. So it's all about this kind of multi-gesture, multi-touch swipes, and, you know, using multiple fingers in particular ways to do different things. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it pans out. I mean, I can't see myself using, using just mobile devices, but maybe there's something in the user interface. I don't know. We'll see.
It's going to be released, I think, to general use in the summer. I think it's already been. Is it already available to developers? I think it is. Preview versions of it are.
Yeah, I mean, that's the normal kind of way they do things, is that they'd let developers have access so that they can, you know, work on making any changes to their software. And if there's new features available, maybe leverage those. So they usually give a developer preview several months in advance.
So you reckon I should get over, and you know something, it is a legacy of kind of the corporate world as well, as Joan was saying, this upgrade phobia that I've traditionally had. I'd still be happy in XP, I think. You reckon I should get over that and just go with it?
Well, I mean, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I think being cautious and having that kind of let's not upgrade unless we have to mentality, it does have its merits. Yeah. Because, you know, I had, let's see, how many Macs do I have? I have two laptops, an iPad, an iPhone, and two desktops. And upgrades across all of them, except for one of them, have all gone very smoothly, but one of them burnt me pretty badly in the last year.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you've backed up your whatever you've got on there that you're working with, then you can always roll back. So it's not a big deal. But, yeah, you know, I think you don't have to worry as much as you would do with a Windows machine.
Okay, well, I'll...
I have to say, I have two times my iPhone once for a while. I have a Windows 7 phone as well.
How did that go? Did you feel guilty about that, Joan?
I felt very guilty about leaving the Windows phone, actually. I had an iPhone first, then I got a Windows 7 phone, and I actually really loved it, and I loved the touch and feel of it. And my downfall was that I could not, for the life of me, get all my contacts over to my iPhone, from my iPhone. And I just, with over 1,000 contacts in there, I really ran out of patience trying to key them all in. And in a fit of impatience one day, just went back to my iPhone. And then I got a new iPhone 4S there recently. So I haven't gone back to my poor neglected Windows 7 phone, which I actually really liked. It was a Samsung one. So I haven't seen the new Nokia one yet. But
I've heard very good things about Windows 7, and I'm due an upgrade myself now this next month. So it's going to be... Possibly, I've gone iPhone, I've gone Android, and I'd say I'd be very much interested to see what Windows 7 is going to offer. We'll move on. I want to talk about one of the stories this week when we were looking for stories to talk about. This headline, China impressed by Ireland's high-tech industries. I was on my way through Bunratty the other evening, and there was... guards and escorts and blue lights flashing everywhere. The Chinese vice president on his recent visit here seems to have been generally wined-dined and shown a good time, and is impressed by what he saw. Michele, what did you think?
Well, I think it's good. I mean, this is great news for us, because I mean the Chinese market is enormous. I mean, it's beyond big. I mean, it's so big that you can't even comprehend how big it is. So if there's opportunities there for us in any sector, not just technology, then, you know, we'd be stupid not to take advantage of it. I mean, the guy who was here this week, what's his name? I don't think I can pronounce his name, so I won't even try. He is tipped to be the next leader of China. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's going around during this tour. He was in the States as well, and I think he's been in a couple of other countries. I think there was something there about him meeting with some people from the agricultural sector as well. I don't know if you heard anything about that.
I didn't hear about that, but I did hear that Ireland was the only country in the EU that he visited on this particular tour. Yeah, he went on to Turkey, I think, then. I think he went to Turkey today, but he was coming from the US. So that's kind of encouraging as well, Joan, isn't it, that on his tour, Ireland was the place he chose to stop in Europe?
Absolutely. I mean, just in terms of what Michaela was saying, in terms of the scale of the Chinese market, I think what's important to remember is it's a bit like Europe in the sense that there's an awful lot of regional differences within China. I've been over there, I've got some friends working over there. And, you know, for Irish people looking at the Chinese market, not to consider it in the whole, because that's like how to eat an elephant. And the answer is bit by bit. So it's pulling off different regions and cities and areas and actually finding a strategy for rolling out in China in the same logical way as you would approach Europe. So if China are looking at Europe with a starting point of Ireland, we need to recognize where Irish businesses need to recognize where their starting points are going to be in going over there. Mm.
Is it something that Irish Internet Association members are interested in? Or do you represent exporters or more people who are doing business here in Ireland, Joan?
Well, Con, so funny you should mention that, and how timely, because our annual conference this year is, the working title at the moment is called Building BRICS, and the BRICS is BRICS, and we are a strong theme, along with social and mobile, is localization for this year's annual conference, and particularly looking at Irish businesses and how they can exploit international markets. So we've got a lineup of some contingent from Russia, and we'll also be having China represented at that as well. Just in terms of looking at mid-sized businesses in Ireland, we do an awful lot in the community in relation to startups, but there is a lot of those now have graduated to being very solid mid-sized businesses who are looking for scalability and growth. And I think China is a really good example of that. In fact, I was talking to a Digital Hub neighbor the other day, Avego, and their strategy is called China First, and their big export markets are actually China and the US, and they're actually prioritizing China now, and they do online ticketing for public transport, and China is their priority. So, you know, it's those kind of businesses that we need to get to that next level, that, you know, real step change into being truly international. So it's a big theme for us this year.
I'll talk to you again about the conference in a few minutes and more about the work you do with the Irish Internet Association, Joan. But very briefly, before we go on, a couple of other stories we just want to touch on. Max Rome have announced big announcements, Michaela, this week and last week. First of all, they've gone and set themselves up as an MVNO, a mobile virtual network operator in the UK. And this week announced that they're selling SIM cards on EasyJet, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I thought they had a deal with a couple of the other airlines already.
I think they did previously. Yeah, I think, in fairness, you know, it's a question of getting maximum value for every kind of announcement that you make. You know, so I think they have done something similar to this previously, but they seem to be getting a lot of very positive attention. And the interesting thing as well that I picked up in some of the coverage of what they're doing, we're talking about Maxroom, by the way. We're talking about Cubic Telecom, based started by a car. Parkman, Pat Phelan, but their head office, I think, now based in Dublin, as it turns out. But one of the things I heard that they're doing is they view it as an opportunity that the Olympic Games are coming to London this summer, and that a lot of people are going to be travelling from all over the world and wanting to phone home when they're based in the UK. That's an opportunity, Joan, that is there for a lot of companies, really, isn't it, at the moment, given that the UK is on our doorstep, that London is on our doorstep, and is going to be an opportunity for companies in 2012.
Absolutely, and they're bringing the rest of the world to London, and I think that's the big door opener for a lot of people. So if you can get exposure to a large global market like that, you know, for that 6-week window of opportunity, it's just phenomenal.
The other thing I wanted to mention was the announcement by PayPal. We've known it was coming for a long time, but confirmed this week as well. 1,000 jobs there. That's very positive as well, isn't it?
Oh, it's just
huge.
Huge. And Louise Phelan from PayPal spoke at our conference last year, and they are so committed. I mean, everything they wrote about her in the papers today was not an exaggeration. It's not over-egging it at all to say she's probably one of the most powerful tech leaders that we have in the country at the moment. And that is a phenomenal number of jobs to be bringing to the country. So it's brilliant. I'm so excited about that, actually. I just think it's the best.
Very good.
Don't know what to say. There's no superlatives that will cover it.
Well, stay with us, Joan, because we're going to talk to you, as I said, in detail about yourself and your work with the Irish Internet Association. Before we do that, Michele, how's Bert, the Black Knight hosting and domains mascot? How's he getting on this week?
Well, he's proving himself to be very popular.
Bert, you know, the dragon, yes.
Yeah. We can't afford to have certain types of models and things like that modelling for us. So we settled for a dragon. It's the year of the dragon, so why not?
You can see lots of pictures of Bert on the Black Knight website, indeed, and indeed on blog.blackknight.com. And you had him giving away an Xbox as a Facebook promotion. You've announced a winner for that.
Yeah, we ran that for 2 weeks, and we had a huge number of entries. Very impressed with the number of entries. I mean, it actually took me by surprise. So we're giving away one more, courtesy of Microsoft Ireland. And so you can go over onto our Facebook page and enter there. And if the more your friends you get to enter, the more entries you get yourself. So it's one of those kind of, I'll use that word I hate, viral things.
Very good. So what's the address of the Facebook page, Michele?
Well, let's use the short one, fb.me/Black Knight.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Technology.ie podcast, brought to you by Black Knight, co-hosted by Black Knight CEO Michele Nealon. Michele is still with us. You there, Michele?
Barely. I'm hanging in there, Con.
Good man. My name is Conor Muinichon, and our special guest this week is the CEO of the Irish Internet Association, Joan Mulvihill. Joan, you're very welcome to the programme, and thanks for joining us on technology.ie. You're in the job, what, 2-3 years now, is it?
Just over two.
Just over two. Tell us a bit about yourself, first of all. What's your own background?
Well, as anyone will see, a lot of e-commerce events have cropped up in the IA calendar in the last 2 years. I actually started my career with Woolworths and the Kingfisher Group in London, and I was there for nearly 8 years between London and Amsterdam in retail. And then I came home and I worked in manufacturing for 2 years as a global sourcing specialist for North America and Europe. And then I went to professional services firm BDO Simpson Xavier, and I headed up their family business division. Then I was made redundant. And about a year later, I got this job. So I can honestly say I've never worked in the same sector twice. I don't know if that means none of them would ever have me back. I don't think so. I like the variety. And yeah. I think you learn a lot along the way. So it's, as I said to somebody once, if you think a mosaic is a legitimate form of art, then my CV is a masterpiece. However, if you think it's loads of shards of broken glass and tiles shoved together, then I might be in a spot of bother.
What attracted you to the job, Joan?
Well, for someone who had been unemployed, I have to say, genuinely, a growth sector. How exciting was that going to be?
Yeah.
I genuinely thrive on the variety. And as I say, I've never worked in the same sector twice. I had worked in Woolworths.co.uk back in 1997 when, as a 24-year-old, I stood in front of the board of Woolworths. And you know, I really think this internet thing might take off. So really a nice way to revisit that. I think e-commerce is a huge opportunity for the sector. I like the idea of a representative body. I think you get to be involved in shaping things and being, you know, I suppose supporting your client businesses. I really, that was a part of working at BDO that I loved, you know, working with client companies and the connection that you have with those companies beyond just, you know, I make money for me, I make money for my company. This is something that you do because you're passionate about it. And I loved that aspect of my job, genuinely adore it. So it's a really great challenge and diverse, and no 2 days are the same.
Go ahead, Gemma Killian.
Yeah, just out of interest, how many members do you currently have, Joan?
At the start of any given year, it's random because we're in the middle of renewal periods, but about 320, and we're hoping to grow that a little bit this year. So the last 2 years has been really a strategy of, you know, it's a downturn, and obviously people are reviewing their memberships, and things like subscriptions tend to be the first things to go. So I said, right, well, let's see, we hold steady for the first year, 2 years, and now we're on a strategy for growth. And growth based on if we deliver value, people will renew and other people will join. So the strategy has been very much around being at the center of things, being in the thick of things. So I hope that's what we've been doing, particularly around areas of policy and things like that, which we hadn't traditionally really done. And also we've really ramped up the kind of training and education side of what we're doing and putting more things in the diary during the year. So it used to be very much, here's the annual conference and the awards as our two major events. But now we tend to run about five or six big events during the year, as well as a diploma and a new diploma we've just launched. So, yeah, it's kind of fast.
Yeah, I have to say, I think the events are fantastic, Joan, and I'm speaking as somebody who hasn't gone to a lot of them. But I've been involved as a member, I suppose, in the IA for maybe 4 or 5 years. And it is someplace I found very, very useful indeed, because let's say as a small startup involved in digital media, involved in the internet industry, I've just found that it's been amazing to go to some of these events to meet not just like people in a similar situation to myself, let's say, in small startups and small businesses, but also maybe larger people, larger providers, and you find yourself rubbing shoulders with the likes of, you know, the CEO of Black Knight Solutions at an Irish Internet Association event. But you find that it's kind of, it is a sort of a level playing field, and that people, not so much a playing field, but that people are indeed eager to sort of help out the newcomers and you know, show them the way.
Totally. I mean, a great example of that has been, to reference PayPal, they approached us as a member and said, do you have, you know, the name of a developer who could do a small project for us? And obviously we don't show preference for one member over another, so I generally tend to give a list and say choose from the above. But, you know, Pillar Projects are there in the Digital Hub. They're not an enormous development web dev company, but they do very, very good work, and they're actually working for PayPal now. And I remember John Beck rang me to tell me he got this gig with PayPal, and he said, I didn't know whether to ring you or my mother first. So I think that's a really good, you know, nice anecdotes of how being part of the IA and getting involved can really pay off for businesses.
Because in fairness, like as Michele was asking you there, 320 members or thereabouts is not a huge number, but it is significant in terms of, I suppose, the overall size of the country we have and the kind of intimacy that is involved. Really, you know, everybody does know everybody, and that's even more true in many cases when you look at a sector as intimate as the internet industry in Ireland.
Absolutely. And I think 320 is, for me personally, because I tried to get to know so many of them, 320 is a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of members there that I would kind of, that would engage with me on a very direct basis all of the time. And you know, I've said it several times, you know, being a member of the IA, if you're not engaging with me, you need to, because I will do anything. I've said this on the blog post from Michele for Black Knight today. You know, I'm like your fitness instructor in the gym. Come and tell me what your goals are and allow me to help achieve those. But then there's some people, you know, that prefer to be just part of the networking and the community part of all that, and it works really, really well for them. But we just kind of encourage people to get involved and get stuck in, whether it's just even coming along to free networking events, or whether it's speaking opportunities or working on some of the working groups, like the Cloud Computing Working Group. I've just had a phenomenal 2 years. They published a white paper the year before last in 2010, in my first year. And then for the last 12 months, they've been working on a decision support matrix for businesses looking to adopt the cloud. And it's been acknowledged now by the National Standards Authority of Ireland. So all the members involved in that are going to be credited in the NSAI document that will be published. So, you know, it's a really great way of promoting your business, of networking with other people. And that working group, again, like the International Strategy Working Group, is everything from the multinationals to the individual players, to the consumers of the technology, to the developers of it. And it's a full-time matchmaking service that we run, I suppose, between the providers and the customers.
What other groups like that do you have, Joan? I know you've mentioned cloud computing. There's I know there's one involved in social networking, isn't there?
Yeah, the social media networking group. Owen Kennedy is the chairperson of that, and he's got his hands full as well. They're two of the larger working groups, and there's about 20 members on that too, and they run a number of events again throughout the year. They had a really interesting international social media event just there before Christmas, where they even had people phoning in from Germany and France as well to participate in the workshop. So they'll obviously be doing a session at this year's annual conference as well on the social media side of things. So really getting the members very much involved in shaping how the conference is. I tend to work with the board in terms of identifying topics. And, you know, that's been really interesting last year. If you look at what we did with the conference, I find that if you've got 320 members and half of them are consumers of technology and half of them are providers, it's very hard to find a single conference topic that's going to suit everyone. So last year we ran two conferences in parallel on the same day. A version of insanity I will never get over, but I'm going to repeat it again this year. But we ran open data is a huge thing that the IA were championing last year, and the skills shortage. So we ran those two in parallel, let's say, on the same day. And then we're going to do this this year with Localization International on one side and social and mobile for the other theme. So social and mobile, very relevant, I suppose, for a lot of our small and mid-sized businesses who are looking just to grow within Ireland and look at new technologies and options for them. But then the localization and international strategy piece for the companies that are just a little bit farther ahead maybe and are looking overseas. So, yeah, trying to find something that fits everybody.
What's the date of the conference, Joan?
10th of May.
10th of May.
Okay, it's a Thursday. We ran a free bar at the end of last year. We're great for free bars in the IA these days. We ran one at the end of the annual at the awards this year as well. That was mental, but good. Yeah.
What's the venue for this year?
We're in the stadium, which is brilliant. We were there last year, and the feedback forms, would you go again based on your experience this year? And it was 100% yes. So I thought, right, that's a pretty much of a no-brainer, really. So we're back to Aviva this year. It's great because it's got broad daylight in the room all day long, and so many of the conference venues are, you know, in closed rooms with no daylight and a sense of I'm here for the whole day. So we like to break it up and throw some light on things, literally.
Now, the events you run, the facilitating of networking, I suppose, and interaction and community building among IAA members is one thing. Advocacy and representation is another aspect, isn't it, of the job, Joan, in terms of representing the interests of members in general and perhaps in relation to government as well?
Yes, and sometimes we bring them to government and sometimes we're on the receiving end of what government are doing. So it's a tightrope all of the time. I mean, we're pushing for open data. That's something we're lobbying on. I hate that word. And then the skills shortage was a huge theme for last year. So we had proposed to government that they implement a tax credit scheme for the people on the skill, the roles in the skills shortage area around development and design and FEO. So we wanted that actually applied to all workers in Ireland, including those we would look to recruit from overseas, on the grounds that we're losing people. People are emigrating even though they have jobs because they're young, they're mobile, their skills are required overseas as well. So there's lots of opportunity of people begging them to go and work for them. So we wanted to keep them. We didn't get all of that implemented, but at least we had an amendment to the Special Assignee Relief Program, whereby the upper level was over 100 grand a year, and it's now been dropped to 75,000 a year. So if you're looking to hire someone from overseas, if they're on 75 grand a year, they get a 30% relief on their income tax. And so it makes it more, you can attract people over on a slightly lower salary than you would have had to offer otherwise to offset the high cost of living here. So, yeah, we were marginally successful there, but we're still at the table, you know, we'll go back and ask again.
Now, a recent incident, I suppose, or a recent event in the news that you were involved in, Joan, was the SOPA Ireland campaign, as it was, which it was an, I suppose it kind of caught people unawares. Minister Sean Sherlock made an announcement in January in relation to the Charlton judgment and that he was going to implement a statutory instrument in relation to that before the end of the month. This kind of got people, Michele particularly, and others indeed involved, and yourself in an official capacity, Joan. You were involved in sending a delegation to meet with the minister in relation to this.
Yes, and again, that's an example of where policy comes to us rather than us bringing policy to government. Obviously, on the Monday, I had correspondence from a couple of members, including Michele, in relation to the IA's position on this. So my first port of call was to contact the department to see if we could get a meeting with the minister, which we were successful in doing. And I felt, you know, my role is very much as bridesmaid in all of this and everything that we do in the IA, and it's about putting the members first. And I wanted to make sure that the minister was hearing the no side, you know, in a very reasoned and responsible way. And I felt that the most appropriate action we could do at that time was to facilitate a meeting with members who were against the statutory instruments to make sure that that side was very clearly heard and understood. And I think, you know, larger corporations tend to involve themselves in the consultation process in a very direct way rather than through intermediary associations like our own. But for other businesses, it's an important opportunity for people, if they want to come together, to contact the IAA and to allow us to do what it is we do.
Does the IAA, Joan, have a position in relation to digital rights, in relation to copyright and digital media? Or is this something which is dependent on, is there even a consensus among IAA members on this?
There isn't an official consensus in the sense that, you know, we don't have a mechanism, and we've never had a mechanism within the IIA to hold a special conference, for example, to make a decision on a policy, which other types of organizations might do. For example, in the GAA as a membership association, they have special conventions to discuss rules and stuff like that, and we don't have that mechanism. So, and it is something that, in light of events in the last month, that I have brought to the board as a something we need to resolve this year, is to say, right, okay, how are we going to deal with these situations in a more proactive manner in future? But what we are effective at doing is being able to secure those meetings and to be at the table. I mean, that's the most we can ask for. And, you know, we're not always going to get, everyone's not always going to get their way. And there are people with diverging and perspectives and opinions on things. I think the SI was particularly bad in the sense of the communication. In relation to, there was really a lack of clarity about what the impact would actually be, and it's not definitive. And I think those things make things quite difficult. But, you know, we're obviously, we have spoken with the minister, we're still in conversation with the minister about that. And so we're doing our very best to make sure that, for me, my big priority is always going to be the industry and the broadest understanding of that. So obviously we don't want to see anything happen that would jeopardize businesses in that space or make their, you know, whether it's taking down whole websites or even if it's, you know, tying businesses up in ridiculous court cases that might not be necessary. But as I say, we're still working on that. And, you know, in the end of the day, the minister has the pen, and that's the way it is with this particular one. And the most we can do is inform him.
But as you say, Joan, we have, you know, as an organisation, you have, you know, you've been, I suppose you have recognition from the minister that you do speak for a constituency, that you do speak for a membership. You've been successful, as you say, in getting to the table. But the question, as you point out, is what is your position, or what do you say when you get to the table? And perhaps this is something that is needed in the future evolution of the Irish Internet Association as an organisation. Is some kind of mechanism to allow members to decide, you know, exactly what it is that they want the association to say on their behalf, if anything.
Exactly. And that's something that we need to look at in terms of our own constitution, to recognise, you know, do we need to put a mechanism in place where all members say, right, our constitution says in relation to any policy issues like this, we are going to have an online poll, blah, blah, blah. And then we're going to say, right, that's the majority. Or do we say, actually, all of our members who pay their fees have a right to be heard regardless of whether they're one side or the other, and it's not the role of the IA to adjudicate. And that's the position I've kind of at the moment the way it stands is I can't adjudicate. I can't decide, choose one member over another. They're like all my children, and indeed, I love them all equally. So the best I do is not play Solomon, but, you know, to bring them before the minister. And I felt very strongly that the no side had not been heard sufficiently, and they had not had the opportunity to put their position forward. And so when, you know, if you're asking me, you know, what my position was in relation to that conversation with the minister, it was, please hear them out. Please hear out the logical arguments for why this might not be a good idea. So that's what we do. We get to the table and we present things in a fair and reasonable way so that we can facilitate an ongoing discussion. The last thing I want to do is find us in a situation whereby, as I say, we're issued with a restraining order and say, please do not come back to us again. So, you know, it's important for everyone, I suppose, to recognize that this is always going to be an ongoing process of negotiation and consultation. And we weren't part of the consultation period last summer. It was extended for a little while. But again, you know, as I say, with 320 members and 1,000,001 issues, unless members come to me and tell me, this is something that we feel very strongly about, please, you know, get us involved, then that's not something I'm necessarily going to pick up. So if members, and I really do appeal to them, if there is something coming down the line that you feel is going to negatively impact your business, that you would like the IA to take a position on, you need to tell me. And that's not trying to get myself off the hook on what has happened on the SI, but, you know, that's the way it has to be. You know, please tell me if there's going to be an issue. I will do whatever I can in my role in representing the Irish Internet Association and indeed the broader interest of the industry to do what we need to do to make sure that those views are heard. But the views of the members, the paid members, I have to say, will always have to come first. So while I might have been criticized for my lack of forthright individual personal perspective on all of this, a lot of that has come from people who are not, in fact, members of the Irish Internet Association. And it would be disrespectful of me to put their needs ahead of the people who are actually fully involved subscribers. So,
Michaela, we've spoken about this before, about how comparatively better organised, not just in Ireland, but internationally, the copyright holders lobby is in relation to these issues around the world. And the importance, I suppose, of the need for online businesses, for the internet community, for the digital business community to be able to organise themselves and make their voice heard and lobby just as effectively. Do you think we need to, do you think there's a need for, I suppose, a stronger role for the Irish Internet Association or some association like it in relation to being able to lobby, in relation to being able to adopt a position mandated by its members and take that position to a negotiating table?
I'm not sure whether it's a case simply of, you know, punting it to the IIA or any other organisation. I don't think that's actually the solution. I mean, the real problem when it comes to internet policy in general, and I mean this, I use this speaking like in the broader sense, is that as an industry, we're very much on the reactive side as opposed to the proactive side. Whereas big business, you know, you're looking at companies that have dedicated resources that deal with, you know, lobbying governments, lobbying government agencies, that they're able to, you know, pour resources into that. Now, it's not simply a question of just monetary resources. It's also, I think, a systemic problem within industry. Though, you know, people just kind of sit back and let things slide, and then at the 11th hour and possibly beyond that, they then suddenly go, oh my God, you know, some big thing is changing. And some of us are kind of going, well, you know, we mentioned this to you several times in the past. You didn't really, you know, pay any attention to it. Mm. So I think part of the problem is that, you know, as an industry, a lot of businesses, I mean, well, understandably at one level, you know, they focus on their business, but they tend to ignore the bigger picture. So like, say, for example, taking this entire thing around copyright and everything else, I mean, it's not an Irish-specific problem. If you look at the SOPA, ACTA, and all the other various debacles in the US and elsewhere, I mean, there's legislation being proposed in multiple countries. You know, people can do something now, but they need to do it now, not when it's too late. And the kind of thing... Go ahead, John.
I think Michele raised a really interesting point just now, and I don't want it to be lost. The idea... Large corporations like Google, for example, or Facebook, they don't work based on what the law is now. They work on how they can push boundaries and shape future legislation. So they're saying, right, okay, currently you're not allowed to do that, but we think this is a great opportunity for our business. So what we need to do is influence government so that in future one would be allowed to do something like that. For example, you know, the fair use on copyright or whatever, and, you know, various other things like that. Whereas traditionally, you know, a lot of businesses that, you know, I would come across, you know, if you look at some of the ones that I know, particular examples of businesses, for example, who are looking at, a business proposition for our children online. Mm-hmm. And they're going, oh, at the moment, you have to be really careful because the legislation in relation to children and how they're using the internet and whatever. If you're a large corporation, you're saying, I'm not going to work within the confines of the law right now. Not that they're going to break it, but that they're saying, right, let's use this as an opportunity to be a game changer and to change and shape the industry. Whereas smaller businesses are not necessarily looking to shape the industry. They're looking at that point to actually fit within it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that... I think that maybe smaller businesses need to think more like the bigger businesses. We need to perhaps get together in forums like the Irish Internet Association. And Michele, you're absolutely right. I think we mentioned this in last week's or the week's before's podcast, and I've put up my hand and said, I'm someone who's guilty of this, as someone who runs a digital media business and who hasn't really thought about what the implications of the regulatory and legal framework are for me in relation to this. But to be honest with you, I think that I and a lot of other people have had our eyes opened by the statutory instrument incident, I suppose, in January, by the campaign that occurred in response to it, by the realization that we could be literally elbowed off the field by larger companies and larger players because we simply wouldn't have the clout in court that only money can buy. So I think this is something that I would certainly have a new attitude in relation to now, that I would like to play a part as a small member of the Irish Internet Association and of the Irish internet business community. I think a lot of people would like to perhaps play a part in actually shaping a policy on this, maybe as a group and as a sector, and then going forward to actually put that policy to government. I think you're absolutely right, Joan. I think I'd like to hear more about it discussed on forums such as this on technology.ie. We'd love to hear people's feedback. And as you've said, Joan, you want to hear people's feedback. You want to hear what members want the association to do. They can contact you through the website, I presume.
Oh, they can contact me through joan@ia.ie. My mobile phone number is there. I daren't say, but, you know, it's answered all the time. Yeah, so contact me directly, anybody that wants it. I'm serious. You know, this is the job. And you know, we want people to get involved and to realize that it's their association rather than, you know, me trying to understand the needs of 320 individual businesses. Mm. But much as I want to get to know them all and understand their individual goals, but, you know, we have to have some means of coming together. And we have working groups. There's a legal working group who are dying to get their teeth, I'm sure, into a juicy topic. But, you know, you're not going to get 10 solicitors sitting around a table talking amongst themselves. It's actually bringing the people who are impacted by those legislations to that table with them that makes it a far more fruitful discussion. And it's one thing that I did when we looked at the working group since I started, is to make sure that they are not, you know, the cloud computing working group, for example, is made up of the consumers of the cloud as much as it is by the providers of the cloud. Likewise, social media, likewise, international strategy working group. And I'd love to see that with the legal working group as well. So, you know, the resources are there. There's, you know, a lot of members who are involved who are very committed. And I think if we can bring these proper issues to those working groups and assign them more as projects, then I think that would be a really fruitful progression for all of us.
The conference is on the 10th of May in the Aviva Stadium, Joan, and I presume people can book for that, or is it just a question of open to all members, is it?
It is. Oh, no, anyone can attend. You don't have to be a member. It's not actually up on the website just yet, because right. I have a really great event on the 9th of March that's coming up first, where we're turning the tables on the pitching process. You know, all those poor startups and all those millions of different schemes that there are available to them? Very confusing to know which one you should be on. Should I be on Launchpad? Should I be on IDAP? Say now, you normally have to go and pitch to them. We're turning the tables and we're getting all those different associations and programs and support structures in to pitch to the startups, which I think is kind of cool way of looking at it. That's on the 9th of March, and we're running 4 diplomas in March as well. We've got a brand new one because of my old retail past on a diploma in e-commerce management, because I'm very saddened and horrified sometimes by the few number of proper transactional websites we have for people selling products and services. And I think it's also a great opportunity for people who are currently unemployed and looking at startup businesses. You know, FOSS can't always be about training you to do a job. Sometimes it should be about giving you the mechanisms and tools to actually start your own business. And I think that's what an e-commerce foundation diploma can really do. So very excited about that as well.
Fantastic.
Go.
Fantastic. All the information on the website at
iia.ie. Everything's on the website. Or just ring me if you're stuck at all.
Very good. Joan, thanks a million for coming on and taking part in the programme.
Thank you very much, both of you. Thanks a million.
Michaela, talk to you next week.
All right, no problem. Talk to you soon.
That's it. Slán go fóill.